that you're getting involved with Shvita Me is going to save the students that face almost 40 years from now. I would have looked at them, you're crazy. But take a look, Baruch Hashem. Yomo is now domiciled in Shvitami in the center of town, up the branch in Beitar, Elite, and he has to pay them by one seder he learns with the chavruta there, and he's two starim, and he said, or two chavrusas, and he skives, he does his share, so Baruch Hashem. All right, Charlie, did you hear yesterday's shiur? They put it up right after class.
I didn't find it more than short. It wasn't where it usually was. It wasn't on the list.
No, it was, but it didn't show up on the regular list. You have to do a search for all shiur. It was there at 11:30 already. It's okay, I put it on a CD for them.
All right, God. You know, people, you don't know the amount of email. You see me working every day.
It's not the person's fault.
The system. I just want you to know that people are corresponding from all over the world. When did you talk about this? I told them, I only give this shiur. Beyond that, I'm an Amoritz Gomorrah. Not only that, nothing is indexed. So there are 1,500 shiurim, but it's chaplap. Yes. It's not indexed. All right, we'll worry about it at a certain point. Gentlemen, take a seat, take a seat, we're ready to roll. Anyway, it was Charlie, we had a look. It was a good shiur yesterday. What do I mean? We tied together Rabbi Shlomo Hyman with Rabbi Gertzulin. You understand that it all came together. I couldn't get over. And the grandson is my sub-Talmud, etc. And we'll talk about him much later today. All right. Anyway, and Jack always remind me to give the date. I think you used to remind me 30 years ago to give the date. Today is October 15th, 2018, and a beautiful morning in Yerushalayim. I say a beautiful morning to burn up the people, the sub-students listening. It's raining, there's a hurricane, the weather, and Baruch Hashem, this is the nicest time of the year in Yerushalayim. I say a Boker Tov to my students and my sub-students, and I also can report that the word I invented, like Meir Kahana, remember Meir Kahana invented words, we once spoke about it. So the word I invented is caught on. They like the word sub-student, and they surface like submarines. That happened to me in the Yinbal. I'm walking along looking for my host and hostess, minding my business, and a middle-aged man comes running at me, and he hugs me. Baruch Hashem from Muncie. All right. One clarification. We spoke a few weeks ago about how Bnei Yisrael got started, and we got involved with the history of the Rosh Yeshiva, including Reb Aaron Feldman, the Rosh Yeshiva today, Rabbi Feldman. And I quoted to you from an email from Chaim Lazarus. So Chaim Lazarus informed me, I called him Rabbi. He was not a student in Near Yisrael. He lives in Baltimore, so he doesn't have smicha. But everything I quoted was correct. And an interesting story, but it's not germane to us, how he came to know Rabbi Feldman. All right, Rabbi Feldman has an extreme position about Eretz Yisrael, as you know, Medinat Yisrael, even about secular studies. He's a b'diavad shebediavad, and that's a problem in Yisrael, where the atmosphere, which was established by Rabbi Ruderman, and afterwards Rabbi Weinberg, it's a much more open atmosphere to secular studies. For Haraya, occasionally a kid leaves YU and he's much happier in Eretz Yisrael than going to John Hopkins. But be it as it may, that's the reality. And once again, I repeat, when anyone criticizes Israel in Chutz Laretz, I punch them in the nose, although I'm not a fighter. But they have to know, you're criticizing Israel as a democracy. Come in Aliyah, you got to vote, make it better, do your share. Don't sit in the Borough Park or Muncie or Baltimore for that matter and criticize. And anyone who's lived here, when you saw the 70th anniversary celebration, the magazine that, I gave it out in class, the magazine that Makor Rishon put out was second to none. People writing to their relatives who are dead and telling them what's happened here. And the most moving part was Meshi Zahav, Yehuda Meshi Zahav, writing to his great uncle or his uncle, Rav Avram Blau, and telling him, Halavai, you'd be alive to see how frum the state has become. It's a different state, and we have to be part of Klal Yisrael and influence in a positive fashion. So that's with Reb Aaron Feldman. All right. Now, on to a very fascinating lecture, and I hope every word I'm telling you is correct. To be intellectually honest here, you're going to see a story that I cry over, I mourn over, and it's a story that should be told and has to be told, and I hope it's told to every mechanech in the world. So, Reb Lezer Silva was a man of action, a great Talmud Chacham. You can't imagine the level he was in learning. For Haraya, the Rav had such derech eretz for Rav Silva. Not only the Rav, Reb Aaron Cutler had such derech eretz for Rav Silva. Reb Moshe Feinstein, he was on a level of learning that he could talk as an equal. The fact that both the Rav and Reb Lezer Silva trembled when they met Reb Yehuda Leitfoyer, well, Reb Yehuda Leitfoyer was the chavrut of the Maichita, that was Reb Shlomo Palachik's childhood friend. When Reb Shlomo came to America 22, Reb Yehuda Leitfoyer figured he can come to America too. And the level of the Maichita, Reb Chaim Brisker said about the Maichita, as a Mashuna Dika Ilya Habrich Nishkezen in my Gan Selebin. Very hard to translate, but such a unique Ilui I never saw in my whole life. And they say, Reb Yehuda Leitfoyer, Chaim Soloveitchik, I heard from him and others, and it's been, the Rav and Reb Lezer Silva, when they had a very difficult shaila, they turned to this little Jew in Holyoke, Massachusetts, and they wouldn't paskin unless he agreed that they were on the right derech. And that was Reb Yehuda Leitfoyer. So, but in addition to great learning, Reb Lezer Silva, he was an ish hamaaseh. He's not a guy like a dummy like Rakefet who sits in his office in Gruss. No, big deal. He sits. He hides from the world. I know Rakefet well. He hides from the world. Take my word for it. He wears a Boston Red Sox hat, and thank God they won yesterday, so I'm wearing it today. It's in the office. He hides from the world.
But
we already discussed that yesterday. After what happened, the 16-1, you can't put on a Yankee hat. I'm sorry. They got to wait. I got to see next year. I'm a Dodger fan already. Wait till next year. What was it? 55? Right. Remember the headline? Next year is here. The Dodgers defeated the Yankees 55. Back here. So Reb Lezer went to work. He organized the Agudat Yisrael, the conventions. And we spoke about last week Far Rockaway 39, which reveals already, Dov, that Far Rockaway was on the map as a Torah stronghold. Somehow, when the Jews made a little bit money, they went to Far Rockaway. And it's a wealthier community. It picks up the Jews from Brooklyn who have a little bit more money, want to be near the sea, it's supposed to be healthier, and that's where the first convention was held. Far Rockaway ultimately falls over to the five towns. What is it called today? West Lawrence, the good part of Far Rockaway. The second convention is in Cincinnati, and that already is Reb Lezer Silva Lahachers, poking it to the Reform movement. And Nebuch, they had a suffer Jews with strimels and beards, payers, and an Erev is put up on Shabbos where the convention was held, for places, vicinity, the shul, etc. An amazing event. And we ended off of the full-fledged support of Reb Lezer Silva, Moriah Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. We ended off with his hesped for Reb Chaim Isaac Grishensky. And here is the grandson of Reb Chaim Brisker giving what was told to me by the leaders of Agudat Israel, by the greatest Rabbanim, the most extreme Agudat statement ever made in America was made by Rav Soloveitchik, and that has been for the Brisker Rav, Hatzitz V'Achoshim, which we did last week. And I want to pick up exactly at this point. Reb Lezer continues to advocate a merger between the Mizrahi and the Agudah. This point we'll come back to much later today, but it doesn't rest. He doesn't allow it to cease fire. It's totally on the agenda. But he starts talking in America. What characterizes Agudat Yisrael? Agudat Yisrael, Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah, Balabatim don't have a say. Everything is decided by Reb Chaim Meiser and those of his colleagues. Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah in Europe, the self-perpetuating body. So Reb Leizer starts speaking, the next great achievement we have to do in America is organize a Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah. Now, the Mizrahi element in the Agudas HaRabbanim, and they were certainly the overwhelming majority, they were led by a Rav from, where did you grow up?
Newark.
Rav Yosef Kanvich. Did you yet know him in your time?
No.
No, he died in the 40s, as I recall. It's before your time. Rav Yosef Kanvich, who was Rav Yosef Kanvich? We're also a Gadol Sheba Gedolim. He was the son-in-law of the Ritbaz. He was the son-in-law of the famous Ritbaz who we spoke about a few years ago, Rabbi Yaakov David Ben Zev Volovsky, the Ritbaz, the Slutsky Rav, who ultimately winds up in Tzfat, runs away from Chicago. You all remember the story, also worthy of a movie. Friday night, locked into the Schlachtoys, the freezer, whatever they called the freezer then, and he gets out, he could have asphyxiated. And tradition has it, or legend has it, but I think it's true, apocryphal stories have it, that he took his wife and children on the train to New York on Shabbos to get out of Chicago, Pikuach Nefesh. So then when he sees America is hopeless, he goes on Aliyat at Tzfat. In Tzfat, he picks up Rav Yosef Kanvich as his son-in-law. Rav Yosef Kanvich later comes to Newark. You may recognize the name. He had a son who was a very famous professor at Cornell University, Dr. Kanvich. That's the son. It's a large family. Not much, unfortunately, remains Jewish today from this branch of the Ritbaz. It's very sad, but not much remains Jewish. They're in America, after all, for well over 100 years, with all that implies. So Rabbi Kanvich was a great Mizrahiite. And he already sensed, what is Reb Leizer doing? What is Agudat Yisrael doing? They're going to organize Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah. They're going to destroy the Agudas HaRabbanim. Everyone's going to listen to them, not to us. He's bringing Machlokes here. We're Mizrahi. They're Aguda. When I received an invitation for the next convention of the Agudas HaRabbanim, I felt I must write to my dear colleagues about the changes, dangers that confront us. The Council of Torah Sages of the United States and Canada, which is being formed, will uproot the authority of our organization. When he means may, he means the Aguda people claim that they are the true leaders of the nation, while the other rabbis are not worthy of heading the Jewish people. They will soon declare that not only are their rulings authoritative, but they are the only authoritative ruling, since they are the trustworthy saints of the Jewish people. And you see, with the organization of Agudat Yisrael in America, there now is a breach in the power, the authority, the prestige of the Agudas HaRabbanim. And this breach will only get wider and wider. In the year 2018, if I ask Simon, who I'm happy to see, and I have to find out how he's here and not elsewhere, when I ask Simon, have you heard of Agudat Yisrael? He'll say, absolutely. I'll say, have you heard of the Agudas HaRabbanim? Rebbe, what are you talking about? You see? But already, you got to give Rav Kanovich credit. He was a prophet. He sensed what this change would ultimately bring about. Now, the rivalry with Aguda and Mizrahi is reflected on not only on this level, it's reflected on another very important level. Today we don't have these problems because the split is so total. But let's go back to Europe. Following World War I, the European yeshivas are relocating, coming back home. They hit not soon after, not that long afterwards with the Depression. and the yeshivas must fundraise. They organized the Vat HaYeshivat. Who stood at the head of the Vat HaYeshivat? The real head was Reb Chaim Isaac Grzynski, but he never signed before the Chafetz Chaim signed on. The titular head was the Chafetz Chaim, and if you look into a history book and see the proclamations, you'll notice that they both signed on the same line, the Chafetz Chaim on the right, the Reb Chaim Isaac on the left. Now, the yeshiva in Europe, to a certain degree, succeeded in keeping above politics. In other words, a yeshiva, a literacy yeshiva, see, Hasidic world did not have yeshivat. The Hasidic world, mim geledin bad Rebbe in Shtup, in Haif, in every Hasidic court, they had a section where the young people sat and learned, that they provided Rebbeim, the teachers for them. I shouldn't say Rebbeim, because you think it's Hasidic Rebbe teaching them, but no, it's Malamdin. But it was not a yeshiva on a level. You had to be a with a high IQ to come out of it a Talmud Chacham. The only exceptions were in modern times. Lubavitch finally in the late 1890s, this fifth Rebbe, opened Yeshiva Tomchei Tamimim. That was the first real yeshiva in the Hasidic world, although it was Lubavitch oriented. In the 1920s, early 30s, the great visionary Reb Meir Shapiro, the Maram Shapiro of Lublin, of Pietrakov first, then Lublin, he recognized that the Hasidic world can't go on with haphazard, desolatory Torah learning. You have to educate the youth, or they will be swept away by Haskalah. And he organized the first Hasidic yeshiva, which was for all Hasidim across the board. And that, of course, is Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin of Lublin. And within a few years, it was the central meeting place and offices of the Gestapo in that area of Poland, Lower Leno. And the Maram Lublin, this was a great achievement. He took in any type of Hasid. When I say it was Hasidic Yeshiva, Rakefit, or then Ani Rothkopf or Charlie Hexter, we could not get into the yeshiva. Charlie, tell me why. No beard, no prayers. You understand? You had to go with Hasidic garb. You had to wear a gatel. It had a mikveh in the yeshiva. Everyone went to mikveh every morning. This is a Hasidic, but no one asked you if you're Chatka Hasid, if you're an Alexander Hasid, if you're Arushina, Sadegera, Biana, whatever you were. You were accepted. Agera Chassid, whatever you were accepted. Those were the exceptions. Now, in Eretz Yisrael, and let me come back to Europe, you'll take Slabodka, you'll take Telz, you can take Radin, you can take any Yudapayashi yeshiva. Many of the great Rabbanim who came out of it were Mizrachistim. They were Mizrachiites, they were Aguda people, but there was not a final concept in the yeshiva, you must be an Agudist or you must be a Mizrachiite. And that continued to the end of World War, when God have mercy, World War II began and the yeshivas were destroyed. That policy continued absolutely. I can give you endless names of Mizrachiites who came out of these yeshivas, and the leaders of Agudat Yisrael came out of these yeshivas. Now, in the state, it wasn't the state yet of Israel, the precursor, Palestine, as the Jewish settlement begins to expand and yeshivas come here, so they also are in bad financial condition, and they have to form a Vat HaYeshiva in Israel. But here too, the split becomes very deep. It's not like Europe. It's the nature of the beast. You're living in Israel. You're living in the dream of the Zionist. Are you part of the dream, or you aren't part of the dream? And I can say it very simply. You all know my work in the Mossad. So my immediate boss in the Mossad was Aryeh Kroll. Zichrono Levracha, and Aryeh Kroll, I should say, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, as Big Skuyat. So Aryeh Kroll, when the serious business was over and we serious business, a notch between beneath life and death, and maybe even life and death, of course. We had to make decisions that ultimately may or may not put people into Russian prisons, into Russian exile. So these were serious, serious decisions. Then the serious decisions are over, and Arye would give me hell that I teach in Michala. Oh, was he furious against Michala? It seems I had a student, I still remember her so well. She was from Kibbutz Sad, and she came to Michala after army, and she became Charedit. No, if you're a kibbutznik from Kibbutz Sad, a B'nai Akivanik, and this girl from your kibbutz, she married a yeshiva bachar, and he's sitting and learning, and she's supporting him. He died young. I lost track of her, but a wonderful young lady. All right, you all know I'm a little bit different than I.A. Kroll. My whole outlook is different. I can tolerate this. That's not the end of the world. It's not so, but for I.A. Kroll. Then he would go on, once he got involved in Michala, he went against the Haredi world. Ein lechem shum chelek b'masha sinu kan. They have no share. They're not part of the mitzvah. They're not part of Binyan Haaretz. You see, if you're living in Israel, it has to come into your daily talk, your daily thinking. It's not like Chutz La'aretz in the 20s. You can run a yeshiva. The 30s, you run a yeshiva. We only have to learn Torah. What you do afterwards, fine. It's your business. Out of Hilda Seimer came a Gudistim and Mizrachistim. It's not the end of the world. Out of Tales, etc. Simcha Asaf, the first member of the first from Jew in the Supreme Court. In the Supreme Court in Israel, there used to be a seat for one from Jew. Today, Baruch Hashem, I hope we're heading that within my lifetime, I will see a majority of the Supreme Court judges, Shema Torah Mitzvah Talmidei Chachamim, Pikchim V'Chachamim B'Dvar Hashem. But then, for many decades, one seat belonged to the from Jew. Nissim Chasaf was a Tels graduate, okay? Taught at Hebrew University. His expertise, knew, helped me out, Kufat Agonim. That sefer we have on Tkufat Agonim, students wrote up his lectures. And that sefer is the best sefer you have if you want to know what Tkufat Agonim is about, Simcha Asaf's book. So in Israel, the nature of the beast, you have to get involved. So they organized a Vad HaYeshiva here, and it's interesting, who chaired the Vad HaYeshiva? They had Chief Rabbi Herzog and Rabbi Issa Zalman Meltzer. So you had two outstanding Rabbanim Gedolei Hadar. But the minute the money started arriving, depends who you sent it to. And if Rabbi Herzog got the money, he naturally would turn it over to the Mizrach HaDatot in Israel, to the people around the religious section of the Jewish agency, and they would give it to institutions that stressed Zionism. And the Litvische Yeshiva, at times, were second best, second rate. They're not teaching Zionism. They have feelings towards HaKadosh Israel. And here, too, they pleaded with Rav Silva, whatever money is raised for the Vad HaYeshivat, send it on with stipulation. It has to be divided fairly. It has to be divided equally. And you have a letter here from Chief Rabbi Reuven Katz of Petach Tikva, 1941, where he writes to Reb Leza, Rav Herzog was just in South Africa, raised good money in South Africa. South Africa had a wealthy Jewish community, and you know that community at that time in 41, a very small percentage was Shomer Shabbos, but 98% of the Jews had Lithuanian hearts. You're aware of it? Yitzchak, remember Din Zar? Where did his mother live? Where did his brother live? Johannesburg. These Jews ran away from Lita. It's an amazing thing. Today, South Africa has the highest percentage of Shmirat Shabbat of any Jewish community in the world, probably including Israel. It's probably on to 50% or very close. But that 50%, 95% of Balei Tshuva. It's an amazing thing in South Africa. The Rabbinate, there's no machloikis, it's organized, it's one, there's Chabad, there's Eish, there's Mizrahi. There's not so much Agudat Yisrael, but they are all organized and cooperate. You go into a Bididi HaBiyuvda, in Cape Town, I see among the people coming to my Sheyua is a lady with her hair covered, and I see a Talmidah Chachama. And then I go into the big supermarket, they're showing me around, and I take a look, you know, they're showing me a tremendous kosher section, and the whole bakery is kosher, and signs are up, Parava, and Milchi, I think they say, in their English. And I see this lady come to, she's the mashgiach of the whole place. And she was coming to my shiur. I cried, wow, what a place. In the Chevra Kaddish in Johannesburg, they have a klal. You can only be a member of the Chevra Kaddish if you've been Shomer Shabbos 10 years. You follow? They won't take a fresh Baal Tshuva because they all want to volunteer to do a tremendous mitzvah. But here he comes, he goes, he raises money, and he forwards the money to Rabbi Meir Berlin and Rabbi Yehuda Leib Fishman, later Maimon, the first minister of religion. I hope you recognize these names. Rabbi Meir Berlin is Rabbi Meir Bar-Ilan afterwards. And of course, the money, they insisted upon dividing the aid only among those yeshivas which will accept the Mizrahi point of view. And see, this problem already comes up time and again. In Israel, it is inevitable. Politics will enter the scene. Halacha l'maisa, Reb Lezer Silva was caught in the middle, did whatever he could. More or less, Rav Herzog tried to be fair. Rav Herzog had a deep understanding of the Litvish yeshiva, although he never studied in one. He grew up in France and England. But this problem haunts us. And ultimately, the division is irreparable. Nowadays, there's no problem with money because there's one type of yeshiva, another type of yeshiva. Each one has their own supporters, and it's quite clear places like Panovich, Slabatka, Chevron are part, essentially, of the so-called Haredi world, to use a new term that's was invented in the last, I would say, 50 years ago. I never heard anyone say Haredi, but about 30 years ago it came into the vogue. It's not a pejorative word, but a descriptive word. And Haredim L'Dvar Hashem is where it comes from, but I'm personally affronted. If someone says, you're not Haredi, I'm not Haredi, I'm more Haredi than 10 of you put together, plain and simple. But I'm not Haredi, correct. Now, the other world, I don't have to tell you, Merkaz Yeshiva B'nai Akiva, Merkaz Arav, everything that developed, the Hezda Yeshiva, and it's each one has its own source of support. One does not conflict with the other, and Baruch Hashem, the State of Israel, gives billions of shekel every year to support Torah, including Haredim and including the Merkaz Yeshivat B'nai Akiva. And to tell you a little story that it should be made public, because people claim the students of the Rav in the 1970s, ultimately everyone moved to the right. After class yesterday we were shmoozing, so I let a cat out of the bag, so, but I can't say it now because it's being recorded. Not everything that I know has to be public knowledge. But one little story I'll tell you. In the 70s, President Shazam, who I had the privilege of knowing personally, President Shazam, when he became president, he was a Hasidic Rebbe already. Not only did he go back to his youth, the Shlomo Zalman Rubishach, which is the acronym for Shazam, But he went back to his youth with Divrei Torah and Hasidus. I still remember when he came to America the first time as president, and he went to visit the Rebbe in 770. You can't believe the press here, what was going on. It's a disgrace for the citizens of Israel that the president goes to visit a rabbi in Brooklyn. A rabbi has to come to the president. Oh, what day went after Shazar. And he answered, he said, I may be president of the state of Israel, but I'm a chassid of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And when it comes to chassidus, I may be the most important person in the world, but I have to bow before the Rebbe. Of course, Haaretz didn't understand him, but any Jew who has a feeling for Hasidus understood him very well. So President Shazar introduced the prize for someone doing great things for Torah outside of Israel. And that year, they awarded the prize to Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. The Liechtensteins, the Rav, was not in a position to come to take the prize in person. So the Liechtensteins went, there was a little ceremony at the president's home, and now the Liechtensteins have a check for the Rav. And they called their father, and I told you yesterday that the Rav spoke Yiddish to his children. So they called the Tata and they tell him that, having the check, but someone tundered us, what do we do with the check? So he said, check made out to me, sign my name, husband my numin, and pass it on to Mekaz Yeshivat Bnei Akiva in Tel Aviv. That's where the check went. So those students who claim that the Rav in the 70s, no, he became a one student. He's a student of mine too. I love him, and he appreciates his Rebbe. I did for him. But he became right-wing. He's a gone, a Talmud Chacham, all right. But he has his own Hashkafa. He once told members of the Rav's family, you didn't know your father in the 70s. He changed. Oh, boy. And that's when that story, the family made that story semi-public. So here in Israel, yes, it's true, and with Rav Shach, without going into more detail, Rav Shach politicized the yeshiva. Until Rav Shach, it was more low-key. But Rav Shach, when he went after Lubavitch, and to a certain degree Ger, and Hasidut, and reintroduced the machlokes of the Vilna Gaon and the Hasidim, and I lived it, I'm not telling you, I don't need any textbook to tell me about what happened in the 80s, I lived it. And from that moment on, there's no question, it would be very hard for a Mizrahiite to go to Slabodka, to go to Panovich. Although to Rav Shach's credit, I have to say, there was one young man from Kiryat Abba, Chevron, who was a Gaon Adir with a Kippah Srugah, and he spoke in learning with Rav Shach. And Rav Shach was anxious to take him into Panovich. Lo aleinu, that young man was killed in a terrorist attack with his father. God, what we've gone through. But all right, this was another issue that came up, and it's starting to cause a fission, starting to cause a deep division within the Agudas HaRabbanan. People like Rav Kanovich were overjoyed, give the money to the Mizrahi Yeshiva, the future's with Mizrahi, Eretz Yisrael, we're building it. And other Rabbanim, Mizrahi, no Derech Eretz for Gedolei Yisrael, no more Etzik Gedolei HaTorah, no concept of Das Teira, Mashiach's not here yet, how do we have sovereignty? They were very happy to give the money, if they could, to the non-Mizrahi institutions. All right. A much more major issue, which came on the surface in the late 30s into the early 40s, and here you're going to see the famous quote that everyone quotes, including the New York Times. What do you do with Hitler? Do you boycott? Do you spit in his face? Or no, Shtadlanut. You go back to the old Jewish way of double talk, of bribery. Let's do what we can. Don't take him on. to use Talmudic language, don't be mishaseh et hakelev. You've come up with that concept in Baba Kama. Don't be mishaseh et hakelev. When you see a big dog walking along, don't kick him. The results may be very bad. And you all understand that this, we've spoken about it many times, the Rav spoke about it many times, Agudat Yisrael took the position, don't demonstrate, don't yell, don't shout, don't boycott. By the late 30s, or already in 36, there was an official joint boycott committee of almost all the Jewish organizations to boycott Hitler. I've told you many times, they held a demonstration in Madison Square Garden against Hitler. My parents attended, and the crowd that came was so large. I think the Madison Square Garden held at that time 25,000 people. There were tens of thousands of people outside Madison Square Garden. That's how many Jews showed up. And everyone accepted upon themselves to boycott Hitler. A medical doctor who was a big activist by the name of Joseph Tenenbaum, I wanted to check the first name, Joseph Tenenbaum, he was chairman of the committee, and he led the fight. But Agudat Yisrael then, 36, 37, 38, there was nothing to talk about. But by 39, 40, they are a power. And here is where the care packages began. Many of you may recall the Rabbinical Council of America was very involved, Rabbi Shalom Dovber Kowalski. Care packages were sent to Russia by the tens of thousands. Now, what does that mean? In the Ukraine, Yomo's family received a package from RCA, and in the package were all types of Western goodies. These packages, for many, were life-saving. Yes, they had to pay mechus on it. The Russians took advantage and charged them a high tax. But what's the difference? I saw communist Russia. You can have 100,000 ruble, there was nothing to buy. So, and then this is literally, I mean, it was shocking, shocking. This is ultimately why the communist empire fell, with basically without a shot being fired. It was a Potemkin village. It wasn't real. They could send Sputnik. Remember, who remembers Sputnik? Who remembers? We were so frightened in America. You remember that, Morty? Charlie, you remember? We were so frightened. The Russians. Yes, they spent the fortune on arms, but the people had nothing to eat, nothing to buy, bread and eggs and the kvass, beets and potatoes. That was the basic Russian diet. Everything else was underground. Vodka, all right. So people gladly gave away, Yomo's family got a package, they gave away 1,000 ruble. But now the food they had, and they could, the goyim came pleading, give us a taste of this delicacy, what's in the package, etc. Kosher food, salamis, hot dogs. It was a lifesaver. And with Russia, we sent hundreds of that. Now, people started sending packages to Poland after the Germans conquered it. The boycott committee was furious. How do you send the packages? And how do you break the boycott? And do you think the packages are being received? The Germans are confiscating them. That's like when you entered Russia under the KGB. So if you had food with you, hot dogs, they took it away. Where'd they take it? They took it for themselves, the agents. Nebuch, I had two shluchim of my dear students, and in Leningrad, and they had salamis with them, which they put outside the window to keep it cold, right? Like a frigidaire. And the salamis fell down. And they went down to the desk and tried, within a minute, some Russian soda salamis, hocus pocus, it is gone. And the boycott committee declared war on Agudat Yisrael, threatened to picket the Agudat Yisrael's offices. And here's what they called Agudat Yisrael. This is 1940, 1941. This was picked up. You'll see it in every textbook describing the situation. Rakefet writes it, quotes it on page 174. A sickly weed transplanted from foreign soil to the liberal American environment. A sickly weed transplanted from foreign soil to the liberal American environment. And I have to tell you, this was exactly the attitude of the average American Jew. This was the attitude of the New York Times. And you can take the sickly weed and interpret it in what's happening today. You may quote me all over the world. The state of Israel is an embarrassment to the liberal Jew in the Western world. We're an embarrassment. We care about Judaism. We care about Kashrut. We care about Shabbat. We care about Tarat Mishpacha. We care about Eretz Yisrael. We care about Mitzvah Yeshiva Aretz. We care about Shas and Paiskim. We're an embarrassment. The New York Times would love to assimilate. Let us, well, Bronfman, take a look. He already was a good Jew of the assimilating Jews. Izzy Singer, Rabbi Dr. Israel Singer, Torah Vadas graduate. He was very influential on Bronfman, but his kids, married to Goyim, right, they claim Jews. If you can't claim Judaism, you have to be born or converted properly and observe. But this is exactly the attitude. A sickly weed. Oh, terrible people. We took away the land that doesn't belong. The land doesn't belong to us. You didn't open the Bible, this week's Pasha. This week, all the temples shut down. And many places where they're good Orthodox Jews, in Teaneck, in Englewood, five towns elsewhere, they don't want to hear this week's Pasha. Lech lecha mi'atzecha mi'voladecha mi'beit avicha. Pikuach nefesh, we don't want to get sick. Closed for this Shabbat. We'll open again for the next Pasha. Got it, Dov? Give me a little laugh. Tell me, did you ever wonder, Lech lecha miyatzcha miladcha mibeit avicha? The order is wrong. You just flew back from America. What did you leave last? Atzecha. Atzot habrit. What did you leave before that? The state of New Jersey. What did you leave before that? The home, your family, your dear ones. The order is wrong. I heard a meritic vote from the Rav on this. Rebbe said, no, the order is not wrong. It's dealing with the psychological, emotional feeling. All right, I'm an American. No big deal. So I know a little American history. I have to. I admit I'll go to Washington, D.C. I see the Capitol, the State Department, the face, the Lincoln Memorial. But Nishtan in Lebanon, it's all right, it's nice, it's part of me, but a very small part. Ah, but then you go back a little bit more. Moladetcha, the Yankees lost. Could you imagine what an idiot I am? 50 years after I left America, took me away, it hurts me that they got slaughtered 16-1. But that's part of it. That already is a little bit more. That's your youth. That's your growing up. Then, of course, the Beit Avich is the hardest. It's your family, your friends, the language, the culture. After all, Simon comes from Atlanta, Georgia. He speaks with a southern accent. It's part of the culture there. You went into a bank. You had a cup of coffee. You spoke with the teller. It's not like an Israeli bank, in, out, hop, lop. Everyone's pushing to get ahead. So the order is right, but a Jew has to do it. And 50 years later, and I can tell you, Morty, how many years are you here? And how many years are you here, Yitzchak and Charlie? And Nebuch, Jack, who I brought in Aliyah, and Vic, whom I brought in Aliyah. As the years go by, you don't even understand the American mentality anymore. I have to caution my students when they're going back for the first time, don't yell, don't shout at them, don't call them up, be Carson, don't give them Musa, because they're not going to understand you. Just be a good example that you came, you saw, you conquered, you integrated, you survived, even without Nefesh B'Nefesh. All right, back In my time, there's no, today there's no mitzvah aliyah. Nefesh b'nefesh lifts you up and puts you down, what we went through. And I want you to know, I said this in my eulogy for the class at the OU, evidently a Baal Tshuva, they got angry at me. How do you talk that way during a Seret Yemei Tshuva that you say we don't have a mitzvah? Oh God, I said, listen, you have to have a sense of humor. That's the only way to survive being a Jew in the modern world. But okay, back here. This was a real problem. Ultimately, the Agudat Yisrael backed off and they stopped sending packages. Part of the reality came upon them that once the Nazis took over Poland entirely, they confiscated the packages. They already didn't want meches, didn't want money. They wanted the Jews to drop dead. Okay. Simon, what did you want to ask?
I was asking, who was picketing the offices?
The Joint Boycott Committee, which represented almost every American or Jewish organization. You follow? They put a picket outside the office. I think their good office then already was on 5 Beekman Street. I may be wrong, but it was downtown, near the part of the east side, but the upper part. Yes,
Hitler. Before you were attacking me for Sadlanut on a macro, this is the split with the law from Agudah.
No, we said there's no question that when I analyzed why Rebbe left Agudat Yisrael and I analyzed Rebbe's writings, and what I know from Rebbe, there's no question that he became an activist. And he recognized that not being an activist, you cannot save Jews. And what hit him in the head, and by the way, the Boston Rebbetzin says the same thing about herself and her husband, that marched on Washington in 43 and Roosevelt spat in their face and called them a sickly weed. It was repeated to Roosevelt, these very words, by one of his Jewish advisors, Rosenman. He got a sickly weed, had no influence. From that moment on, Rebbe becomes much more active. And then when you see the Chamesh Drasha, look what he's praising, Tzahal, activism. When you see Chol Dinu Dofekamin and the Chamesh Drasha, his ultimate vision, the B'nai Akivinik with the Gemara in one hand and a plowshare in the other hand, or a gun in the other hand. Oh, this is an activist. By the way, I reached the conclusion, said it publicly, I say it on that tape, etc. Rabbi Lichtenstein, a few years later, speaking in the Gush, said exactly the same thing. That World War II taught the Rav, one has to be an activist, and this concept of Das Teira at times can be totally incorrect, and that's the whole thing with Joseph Vyechov, his whole theory, which I consider the most important homiletical, theological statement the Rabbi ever made. But
that's how he explained that Yaakov got the Yehovah.
Right, the same not thing with Yaakov and Rivka. Not that he stole them, absolutely, but there was...
That he can live in two worlds.
Right, it was a machlekes l'shem shemayim. Yitzchak felt, let him be only a yeshiva bacha, and the goyim will help us. And Rivka said, no, that's not good, because there'll be times when the goyim will not want to help you, and a Jew has to be able to do it all. And Rakefet says, this is why in Eretz Yisrael, there's ultimately no machloikis over Torah Derech Eretz, because here too, the Derech Eretz becomes mitzvah Yishiv Eretz. So everything we do is a mitzvah. And you see how the Haredi world today is coming out of the ghetto. And the women, the men, our lady here, Rivki Pinchas, who's from the Haredi world, her father-in-law was Rav Shimshon Pinchas. She's leaving YU. Why is she leaving YU? She got a fabulous offer. She's a controller. She's a brilliant lady. What she can do. You see today, the daily newspaper of Shas, who bought it, who became the editor? A lady from B'nai Brak. But they're part and parcel of the Israeli scene. And Baruch Hashem, the more that come out and remain tzaddikim, the more that will follow in their path. One day, David Ben-Gurion used to dream, we'll see a Ramatkala Temani. That was David Ben-Gurion's dream when they said to him, look how you've put down the Sfardim and they're second rate. And I say, one day we'll see a Ramatkal, can be a Temani, doesn't matter, with a beard and payas. And then we'll know we've arrived, we've achieved. But no one here can put Derech Eretz out of the picture. Because without Derech Eretz, they can't be a state. Without a state, there's no mitzvah yishev eretz Yisrael. By the way, what I just said now, it's very big. When you speak about in chutz laretz, you make the point, oh, you're a medical doctor, you're a lawyer. All right, you're making a living, you're doing good things. In eretz Yisrael, you'd be doing exactly the same, but you'd have a dual achievement. Because it's not just making a living, doing chesed, mitzvah yishev eretz Yisrael. Whatever you do has the extra layer of sanctity. It hits home. A good Jew, that speaks to his heart. You can't yell at him and shout at him, why aren't you leaving, etc., etc. Yeah, calmly. But Baruch Hashem, we get the Trumat and Maisrat of Chutz Laretz. All right, we have arrived. 1941 is the third convention of Agudat Yisrael in America. They choose a city which at that time, maybe you can make an argument even today, is the frumest city outside of New York. Ethi, it's not Toronto, it is Baltimore. Baltimore was then a 90% a YU city. All the Rabbanim were Reitz graduates. All the big shuls had microphones, and according to Rav Simcha Levi's psak, but it was a frum city. There was more Shmirat Shabbat in Baltimore than Boston, Detroit, St. Louis, you name it. Not only that, Baltimore was a very good location. It's not New York, it's out of New York, closer to Philadelphia, closer to Chicago, very good location. Wherever there are a handful of from Jews, they can make it to Baltimore. That was the venue. But there was more about 41. By 1941, everyone who's going to be saved from Hitler has been saved. You're not going to save anyone after 41. And by 41, you had endless great rabbinic names in the United States. First and foremost, Rabbi Aaron Cutler. I've spoken about him in the past. It's not time to go into great detail now. But there's no question that of any of the Litvisher Rabbanim who arrived in the United States, Rabbi Aaron Cutler had the greatest influence on the Torah world. Litvisher. I can't compare him to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Chassid will say the Lubavitcher Rebbe had more influence. No question, he had great influence too. A Satmar Chassid will say no one equaled the Satmar Ruv, who ultimately not only has influence on Satma, but on the Litvisha world as well. There's truth to that. But of the Litvisha Rabbanim, Rabbi Aaron Cutler. Rabbi Reuven Gazupski of Kamenetz, now of Torah Vadas, later Beit Medrash Elyon in Spring Valley, first real kollel in America. Spring Valley that creates, Simon, you don't know this, Spring Valley spills over into, just give it one second. Good. Spring Valley spills over into Muncie. You don't know that. Rav Reuven Gazupski. No, how does Rav Reuven Gazupski tie in with this very room? With this very Rebbe? Very simple. When I lived in New York and was at the yeshiva every day, I'd see Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein and Tova, and there was a gleam in their eyes. Tova's expecting her second child, Yitzchak Lichtenstein. Little kid, saw him grow. Tell me, who did he marry? Rav Reuven Gazupski's granddaughter. When I learned in Lakewood, one of the top students, older, was Rav Chaim Gazupski, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, Rav Reuven's son. Rav Chaim's daughter married Yitzi Lichtenstein. and Yitzi Lichtenstein, can anyone tell me what the headlines are in New York? He just became the Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas in Brooklyn. So Torah Vadas in Brooklyn, unbelievable. Reverend Gazovsky's grandson-in-law, Rabbi Baruch Leibowitz's great-grandson-in-law. And here is Ani Rothkopf sitting and telling you that when he was a little kid, I held him in my arms. Little Yitzi.
Wow.
Is it good? Freedom of choice. He chose to remain in Muncie, America, now Torah Vadas, but Galgal Choser Biolam, the world never stands still. His son, as we speak, is commanding an elite unit up north in Tzva Hagana LiYisrael. And if I can end off this little diversion, do you remember last year when they showed me a picture of Yitzi's son in basic training? I had a conniption. Here is the son of Yitzchak, the son of Reb Aaron Lichtenstein, the son-in-law of Moriu Rebbe, Reb Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik. And this kid in basic training in his army uniform, his tzitzit are sticking out, and their tchelet tzitzit. Oh my gosh, Dov, the love storm back and forth. We can't put on Tehillas, but Hadin Nishta Mesorah, it's written in Sheirum L'Zeich Abba Murray. I know, they say that after the Rav died, they say Rav Aaron Lichtenstein mellowed, and he said, well, if you want to do it, and Rakefet has said, Adarabba V'Adarabba, but I can't do it, it's a different story. Yes, Morty, how are your Tehillat Tzitzit coming along?
Okay.
You okay?
I finally figured out how to do it myself.
You told me. Okay.
Question. This son, the Yitzi son, is he doing it with the approval or the encouragement of his father?
So I want to tell you, they asked Reb Aaron Lichtenstein many times, are you happy with your son? He's the only one of all the children. The other children are all totally integrated in the Mizrahi world here. And he said, look, everyone has freedom of choice. He said, maybe I'm disappointed a little. So I would imagine, Yitzi, you should know that Yitzi came back and did basic training, Shlav Bet. He didn't, you follow me? Uh-huh. Technically, he was Yotzei, his obligation. He could be called up Miluim in the army if there's a diet. They're not calling people that old anymore. I see with today, the army is so big. My grandson was a Tzanchan, and wow. He told me they moved him out of his unit. And he said they're not even interested in me anymore because he's late 20s. You follow? My time, the army, I did basic at the age of 38. Basic training at the age of 38. I was kicked out of the army when I turned 49. I wrote a letter of protest and they took me back in. When I turned 54... I wrote a letter of protest and they told me to take a kite and fly to China. They held a little ceremony, gave me a medal, you know, the ribbon from 82, and they saluted me and thanked me, and I never heard from them again. Until then, every week I was getting a sub in the mailbox. Anyway, all right, Reuven Rezovsky, Reb Mendel Zaks. Who is he? Chofetz Chaim's son-in-law, Rosh Yeshiva in Radin. And in Radinvik he had a student by the name of Shmuel Belkin. Okay? You've got to have muscle, who you teach. You never know later in life. I taught a girl in 83, 84, from Montreal. Go and dream that today she's one of my doctors. I see her every 3 months. You know, teach, student. That's pshat, have you noach l'shocheret. No, I challenge you though. What does Pirkei Avot mean? Be nice to the guy who's black. You know what that means? You have a white beard. You're teaching. You're going to have a kid with a little black beard. You're going to think you're a big shot. You're older, you're smarter. You better be nice to him because you don't know where he's going to be 10, 20, 30 years from now. You know what they say to the executives? Be nice to the guy on your way up so he shouldn't kick you on your way down. Got it? So Reb Mendel Zaks taught Shmulek Belkin. Now, Reb Mendel Zaks, I'm pausing to give you the honest story. Oh, I stood north for him. I spoke in learning many times. We were good friends. He was the boat. So you see, he didn't find his place in America. He started, he was in Canada, then he came back, New York, then Mount Vernon, because you had B'nai Torah from Europe coming, they wanted to learn yet. And he, it didn't catch on. What he started in Mount Vernon, you tell me where it is today? Lakewood. That was the nucleus of Lakewood, was from Mount Vernon to Lakewood. But Rav Aaron Cutler moved mountains. So Rav Mendel needed a job. Rav Shmuel Belkin took him into the yeshiva. And that's his mazel, that this kid he taught many years earlier was able to give him a job and dignity. He was the bochen of the yeshiva. But the truth has to be spoken, he never was totally at home in the yeshiva. You see, it's not Reb Moshe Shapskis who was totally at home in the yeshiva. It's not Reb David Lifshitz who was totally at home in the yeshiva. It's not Mori Urebi who was the yeshiva. Rav Sachs couldn't be at the troubled him. The college, the dean's reception, the more liberal attitude that the yeshiva espoused to a certain degree, he never was totally at home. And the Haredi world has a very difficult task when they try to be intellectually dishonest. How do you portray Rav Mendel Sachs? Why you? I remember with his youngest son who was born in America, if I'm not mistaken, or born close to their coming to America. So yeah, it has to be close to their coming. I remember I was on a bus to a wedding of a chaver of mine who later went to Mir Yeshiva, and we got to talk, and he said, my father was never at home in the yeshiva. I said, I used to see him every day. He said, there was, I quote him, a good place to take a paycheck. Oh, did I get upset with that comment. But that was Reb Mendel, and he was part of YU. The proof, Yomo, that what I'm telling you is correct, is that when the Lamshul Rav died, Rabbi Belkin asked him to become part of the Masmichim, the three giving smicha, to join the Rav and his Talmud, Rav Shmuel Belkin, and Reb Mendel Sachs would sign the smichat as well. And he refused. See, that's a responsibility. You give smicha, look what became a rakefet, a religious Zionist through and through. You don't want that responsibility. For the Lamshul Rav, that was not a problem. So it's interesting. But he now is in America. Rabbi Avram Yaffin knew. Who is Rabbi Avram Yaffin? The son-in-law of Rabbi Yisrael Horowitz, the founder of Nevadik. Nevadik Yeshiva in Borough Park, opens in Brooklyn. This is the famous Rabbi Avraham Yaffin, who was the most famous graduate of Nevadik in Brooklyn. Someone named Yitzchak Greenberg. Recognize the name? Yeah. Yitz Greenberg. That's their most famous graduate. And believe me, they can't boast about that famous graduate. All right, that's Nevadik. Who else was now in America? Reb Elie Bloch, Elie Meir Bloch, Reb Mordechai Katz of Tells in Cleveland, the two Tells of Rosh Yeshiva, who were stranded in America raising funds for Tells in Europe and reopened Tells in Cleveland. At one time, Tells in Cleveland was a powerhouse. Today, as we've said many times, Tells in Cleveland is a has-been, but it gave birth to Tells in Chicago and Tells in Riverdale. And then you not only had the great Rabbanim, you had the legendary figure who has honorary smicha, Jacob Rosenheim of the World Agudat Yisrael from Frankfurt, Talmud of Rav Sensner Fol Hirsch, the man who put Agudah on the map. Knew, does anyone know who I'm talking about? The honorary smicha, Yitzchak, you remember what I said about it many years ago? The story is very simple. Without Jacob Rosenheim, Agudat Yisrael would be nowhere. You think a Litvisha Rosh Yeshiva can run a worldwide organization You think a Hasidic Rebbe who davens the chakras from 9 to 12 in the day and then learns Kabbalah and davens Mincha from 3 to 6 and then learns Shas and Paiskim and davens Marit from 7 to 10 and then eats his breakfast, you think he can run a worldwide organization? The only people who can run a worldwide organization like this Friday night, I ate with Yekis the Horim, with the biggest Yekisha Yichus. And we all agreed, only a Yeki can run a worldwide organization. And Jacob Rosenheim was the man, Rabbi Yaakov Rosenheim of Frankfurt, who ran the Agudat Yisrael. He was now in America too. What am I talking about, an honorary smicha, Vic? Is there such a thing as an honorary smicha? One, you know, they give honorary doctorates, right or wrong. Professor Shaul Liebman never had a real doctorate, but I think he had something like 36 different honorary doctorates. All right, honorary doctorates. You do something, you do great, you give money, whatever it is. I told you, I try to get an honorary doctorate for Ani Rund. He built Chubana Echad Mechurvat Yerushalayim, Katamon. So the answer I got from YU was, with a $25 million donation, we'll give them an honorary doctorate. All right? They're honorary doctorates. Although there is one person that they did give an honorary doctorate, I might say. And they got a little money from the community. But an honorary doctorate, who ever heard of an honorary smicha? But in 1929, the second Knesia Gedola that was totally put together by Rabbi Yaakov Rosenheim, he was so popular and so successful in what he achieved that at that convention they gave him a scroll, and you can find it online, which read that in lieu of all that he's done and because of all his achievements, we are declaring him a Rav Morenu V'Rabbeinu, Rabbi Yaakov Rosenheim, signed by all the Gedolei Yisrael of the late 20s. So he takahan an honorary smicha. Wow, these people were in America. What a convention. And Reb Lezer Silva pleaded, elect the balabas, get someone who can be active. I'm caught in the Ravnet, I'm caught in Cincinnati. I can't put this place on the map. And the Balabatim, the Rabbanim, refused to listen, and he was re-elected unanimously as president of Agudat Yisrael, and Rabbi Yaakov Rosenheim, the honorary president. But at this convention, a major step was taken, an achievement was reached, they established in America, the Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah of the United States and Canada. And here, who did they select as chairman? No question, the greatest Aguda leader in America at that time, Rabbi Aaron Cutler, Kletzker Rosh Yeshiva. Rabbi Lezer Silva and Reb Shlomo Hyman. As we spoke about last week and yesterday, Reb Shlomo Hyman perhaps was the greatest Lithuanian student who became a world-class Talmud Chacham to arrive in the United States. He was on a level with Reb Silva, with Reb Aaron Cutler, and then you need more than the three chairmen. The Inner Council, who did it include? Reb Meir Yablach, Reb Moshe Feinstein, the Biyana Rebbe, who we spoke about last week, Reb Shalom Friedman, Reb Reuven Gazupski, Reb Avram Yafin, Reb Mendel Zaks, and one more person, crucially important, Mori Rebbe, Reb Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. So here you have a man. This will be the only person in the world who later serves as the honorary president of Mizrahi, who was once a member of the Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah. Charlie, we just praised the Yeki world and explained that a Guru could not exist without them. You'll pick it up on the tape. Rabbi Yaakov Frozenheim. My dear students, I'm about to tell you every syllable is true. This goes back, time flies, I have to admit, I can't believe we're heading to Hanukkah already. I'm still not at Rosh Hashanah, and we're heading to Hanukkah. Many years ago, I don't know, 15, let's say, 20, but there was already the internet. So a kid walks into the shir, a young man, very bright, boisterous, nice personality. Who are you? We got to know each other. He tells me the story. He was raised in the valley in California. I don't have to tell you, in California, it's a little bit different than New York. If you think New York is liberal, in California, you could probably walk naked on the street and no one would say boo. And he was a wild kid in high school, totally his home, totally religious, typical assimilating American home, what they call a reform home, a conservative home. I mean, it's this total assimilation. And he said, I was so wild, I didn't need school, I learned whatever that they wanted, I picked up what took them a week to study, I picked it up in an hour. I was hanging out with gangsters, and then Torah picked me up, some outreach. And he came to Israel to study. I believe it, he winds up in Ar Sameach. I can't believe this happened in Aish, but it happened in one of those two, I think Ar Sameach. My memory is faulty on that level. I know, I never paid attention. I said, so how did you know about my shir? He said, oh, I picked it up on the internet. People talk about it. Well, he came. Wonderful student, very bright, brought some friends. And then he went back to America. But before he went back, I forget in what context, maybe it was my lectures on Zionism many, many years ago. Zionism, Agudat Yisrael, before I went into Das Torah. So he hears me say that the Rav was a member of Moetzet Gedoliat Torah. And going back to his yeshiva, right-wing outreach, they were busy at that time maledicting YU and Rav Soloveitchik, etc. So he told his Rebbe there that, why are you maledicting Rav Soloveitchik? He once was a member of the Moetzet Gedoliat Torah. And the Rebbe told him, impossible, not so, who told you? He said, well, I went to hear lectures, mentions my name, or his name. It's a liar. It's not so. He's fibbing to you. So this kid came to me, he said, this is what happened. I said, look, I didn't make it up. Look at my source in the Silver Era. It's in Pardes 41. Now, they had no reason. You understand? It's Mesich Lefi Tumo. If you learn your day, you know what I'm talking about. They had no reason to fabricate this. So I told it to the kid. Simon, the kid listens, a very bright kid. I'm telling him one thing. His Rebbe back in Ar Sameach is telling him, I'm lying to him, intellectual dishonesty. You know what the kid did? He went to the National Library with the Hebrew Library and he took out Hapardes and he Xeroxed it. Came back to my class, he told me, you're right. Went back to Ar Sameach, showed it to his Rebbe there, the Rebbe, let's put it this way, all lies, all fibs. I want you to know that that incident totally turned the kid off. Back to America and reached the conclusion that all the rabbis are phonies and Judaism is one big fabrication. He has a website today on atheism. And this was the touchstone. I'm not shy, I have to admit it. You should know I contacted him. when I heard the story years later, what happened to him? I never heard from him again. There was some correspondence when he left, and those who knew him told me the pain of the rabbi not believing and not believing a published word started him in a journey that took him far away from what had saved his life on the coast when he was a wild high school kid. He said, no, I got back a nice answer, but in reality he said, dear rabbi, I remember you fondly. There's freedom of choice in life. May God bless you and keep you as far from me as in Anatevka, keep the Tsar away. Got it, Simon? Never forget that story. And by the way, Morty, Yishnei's not the only student. I had a girl, I don't mention them, in the most well-known Orthodox family. And I was so close to her. Our souls bonded at Michlala, foreign students program. And then I found out years later, I contacted her family in Borough Park, her brother-in-law, the Rav, her sister. Can I contact her? And they said yes. They told me the whole story. She was a lesbian for a while, now this, she was this. God have mercy, what became of her? And killing her parents, which is par for the course. And I wrote to her, you should know, I contacted her, we had correspondence, but essentially I got the same answer. You're a wonderful person, Rebbe. May God bless you and keep you far from me. Let me go on in peace. Contacted her. You saw the movie, the People Apart, on the Hasidic community in Borough Park that won all the prizes. The YU graduate put it out, damn. And 20 years ago. So in the movie, there's the girl who breaks with her Belza background. And it broke my heart to see, God, she could have gone to Stern College and had the best of both worlds. You should know, I tried to contact her. I had a student then, Avi Fried, who was born into outreach. He now heads up the outreach in Bal Harbor, Florida. He has a full-time job in outreach there. A fabulous individual. He said, Rebbe, he got me her phone number. Oh my gosh, I called once, I left a message, I called twice. I heard from her like Mao Zedong is singing Zmiris right now. Got it? But I never forgot that fellow, that story, that Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah. It breaks the heart. Notice whose name just surfaced. Rav Moshe Feinstein. See, Rav Moshe was already an American in 37. He didn't create waves. Rav Moshe came to America. He was saved by his brother-in-law, who was Rav in Toledo, Ohio, Rav Nechemya Katz. He's the one who got him the non-quota immigrant visa. I trust you all know what I'm talking about, because without knowing this, you can't understand a lot of the history around the early 40s. You couldn't come to America on your own. There was a quota, and the East European quota was filled already to the year 2000, let's say. But if you non-quota, meaning America needed you, you had an ability that no one else has. See, it's not like Canada. Canada, if you have enough money, you can get into Canada. If you show you have enough money to invest, any Israeli can get into Canada. I forgot, you know what the sum is? It's a hefty sum, but it's a few hundred thousand dollars, let's say. Australia too is like that?
Right.
Okay. But America, you had to be needed. What does it mean needed? That some American institution sent you an invitation and could show that they needed you. And Reb Moshe, how do you get out of the communist regime? How do you come to America? It was a terrible story. But finally, Reb Nechemya Katz, who was his brother-in-law, got congressmen involved, and they sent him an invitation to come. That's why they say he went to Cleveland, because the original invitation was to be a rabbi in Cleveland. It was part of Ohio. So he went there, and he saw there's no future there. Then, unfortunately, the leading figure in MTJ, Rabbi Adler, drowned. He was, I think it was from Far Rockaway, swimming. He drowned, and they needed a Rosh Yeshiva. They needed someone of knowledge. So they took Reb Moshe to MTJ. No one heard of Reb Moshe, basically. He was one of many Rabbanim who came. But very quietly, still a hate, the word started to go out that this man is a posek mufak, a great Talmud Chacham, and this is where you see among all the other names, there's Reb Moshe Feinstein. He's starting to surface. Now, Agudat Yisrael is now caught up with the war years. And I just want to touch upon one other topic that we may not be able to complete today, but this is a very, very famous topic. It is known as the Tehran Children Controversy. And here you come, full head conflict with the World Zionist Movement. This is a conflict that, thank God, no longer exists today, but was a major conflict in the 40s, the 50s, the 60s. I would say, following the Six-Day War, it starts to change. And the conflict is very simple. We have to go back to the Zionist dream. The first people to think about Zionism in a practical sense were religious Rabbanim. Rav Alkalai, Yehud Alkalai, Rav Shmuel Malava, Rav Kalisha. These were great Rabbanim. We're going back to the first part of the 19th century. And all over Europe, people want to go home. People want self-determination on a political level. The Poles are fighting for Polish freedom, the Italians for Italian freedom. And these just say, why can't we have freedom? Why can't we have our land back? And you all know that they wrote Sfarim. But no one listened to them. And it comes back again to what I referred to before with Rabbi Yaakov Rosenheim. You can have the greatest rabbis in the world, but they're busy. They're busy. I'm a very bad person. I've gotten invitations over the last 20 years. I cannot tell you. I've turned down 95% of them. I just don't have the time. I don't have the energy. They're busy. I'm not. I've been active from 4:10 this morning. My word, yesterday from 4:15, today from 4:10. I don't want to boast. I've been active. If I would tell you how much I already learned today. But you got to learn, you got to write, you have to produce, and you're a human being. You have a wife, you have children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. Rabbi Yaakov Rosenheim is not the greatest lamdim in the world. Follow me? That's why I called it an honorary smicha. But he devoted himself to Agudat Yisrael, b'chol ha'leiv, b'chol ha'nefesh, b'chol modo. The question here with the Zionist movement, Herzl came on the map. He gave his life. He died at the age of 44. The man was totally consumed after he saw the anti-Semitism and assimilated Jews suddenly woke up that the world hates Jews, the Dreyfus trial. He put Zionism on the map. And most of these Zionists that followed Herzl were in great rebellion against their parents, against their upbringing, against their education. Story that I believe I wrote in Washington, that happened to me when I was doing my research on Revel. So the family and documents all say he was arrested in 1904 and 1905. A lot was going on in Russia. And he was a Bundist at the time. No, you're writing a doctorate, you want to have sources. So I went to the YIVO archives. I think they're combined now with Yeshiva University, etc. I went to the YIVO archives and I did my research and I found that he was arrested. I got more details, Kovner, etc. And I'm sitting in their library, in their research center, It was on the, if I recall correctly, on the Upper East Side. I hope my memory is correct, but I remember that it was on the Upper East Side. And I'm wearing a kippah. And there's a lady in her 70s, perhaps. You could see an old-time socialist. And she's staring at me and staring at me. And then she comes over and tells me off that I'm wearing a kippah, that I'm from, we destroyed the world. It's because of you. That in Russia, the rabbanim made a mishaberech for the Tsar. And she's telling me off. I'm looking at her, lady, I'm a third generation America. Do I know what the heck went on in Russia? Later in life, I found out I have a famous picture that's been republished many times that I took in Russia of the mishaberech for the SSSR on the wall of every shul. Not for the Tsar, but for the great communist empire. But you see, they were in total rebellion. And if we're going to create an Israel, if we're going to fulfill Herzl's dream, we have to create a new Jew. And you know what they did? They went after the ignorant Jews who came in Aliyah, particularly the Sfardim, who were never exposed to this type of challenge, didn't have the education to withstand it. And they told them, this is a new world. Religion is on the other side. With religion, we can't build a state. And they took them into secular kibbutzim filled with hatred, which until today, try to build a kibbutz in some of the left-wing, try to build a shul in a left-wing kibbutz. Read what went on with voting and enmity and fighting. Sometimes now down south, there's a kibbutz for the first time ever built the shul. They need people to live there. The only ones willing to live down south, opposite Gaza, are from Jews. But they, excuse me? Yeah, I read about it. Kinneret, the first time ever, and they fought a battle till they got the vote, but the old timers, they took the Sephardic kids into a kibbutz, took a chicken, chopped off the head. We don't need a rabbi. This is ancient history. Kids came in from Yemen with payas. They cut the payas off. And these are facts. It cannot be denied. I don't like Sona. No, Hasfa Khalila. No, these are facts. Cannot be denied. Ben-Gurion and his ilk and that era, not everyone, but generally speaking, they were all part of this thrust, a new dawn, a new Jewish people, a new concept of life. We have to forget yesteryear and create the new Israeli man, right or wrong. Now, you can... By the way, this is going to break and break very big, but there's no one you can send to jail now. The Yemenite kids who were taken away from their parents and sold. People from America, people from South Africa, the stories that are coming out now. They're still eyewitnesses, people who are in their 80s and 90s and telling stories. They were nurses, they worked in hospitals. You all know what's going on. They're opening up the archives. And this was this attitude that the old type Jew, particularly the Sfardim, don't count. We got to re-educate them. We have to recreate them. And this is part of the Israeli scene until today, although there's no question from the government point of view that it's much fairer. The Chiloniim claim Hadatah. It's too fair that the religious Jews, Hadatah, you recognize the word, the new word they coined. You're forcing religion upon us. They're getting too much money. The yeshiva are being supported. The heads of the yeshiva, etc., etc. This is part of the Israeli scene. But in the 40s, it was the dominant theme. And this conflict broke out over the Tehran children. It was, I think, 800 kids from Poland succeeded in leaving Poland during the war, getting to Iran of today, Persia at that time, and from Persia, which was very friendly with the Jews in Palestine, these kids were brought to Israel in the height of World War II, smuggled into Israel. And what do you do with them? And Be'ezrat Hashem, 1 week from now, we will pick up where we have left off. So what did we do today? Agudat Yisrael, Reb Lezer Silva, 1941. Moedzet Gedolei HaTorah. Reb Yosef Kahaneman, who was like a prophet. He was right on top of it. Reb Yosef Kanvich. Thank you. Thank you for correcting me. Reb Yosef Kanvich, not Reb Yosef Shlomo Kahaneman, that's Panovich, it's a different story. But Rav Kanvich of Newark, he says, you're going to establish a Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah, what's left for Agudat Yisrael, what's left for the Rabbanim, and Enoch Inami. With the rise of Agudat Yisrael, you have Agudat HaRabbanim slowly but surely going downhill. And we'll get to it in much more detail. There are reasons why. You have a new major player on the American scene, Reb Aaron Cutler. And that Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah, Mori Rebbe, Reb Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. Interestingly, when I was going in Aliyah, and I knew I had a contract with JPS, which opened many doors for me. Ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu. You don't even know what JPS was. Jewish Publication Society, which then was the biggest prestigious book. And I was the first Orthodox book they ever published. Even the Bible they messed up. It was all by conservative. Yeah, you know.
They had three guys there.
One Orthodox, one conservative, one Reform. So, but the Rav was not happy about it, Yitzchak. But JPS, I had the contract. What I was about to tell you? Where were we? So when I knew I was going in Aliyah, I figured I got to go to Dr. Belton. I got to go to the Rav. I owe my life to them, and I have to ask their permission to publish what I have about them. So Dr. Belkin said to me when I showed him his letter to Rabbi Revel about Bernard Revel Grashkel, he said, lose it in the text. He says, don't publish it as a letter. But you know, he couldn't tell me not to publish, but lose it in the text. He didn't want to come across for Rabbi Zaks that he's Chochmat Yisrael. You follow? Lose it in the text. But then he said to me, but be sure to mention I was a Rosh Yeshiva in New Haven. That was my first teaching job in the United States, which shows you Rabbi Belkin's mind that he was very proud that he was a Rosh Yeshiva in New Haven. There's more to him than just YU. I went to the Rav and I showed the Rav a letter he wrote to Rabbi Revel, and the Rav said, I quote him word by word, he said to me, what can I tell you? I wouldn't write a letter like that today, but Chatimat Yodai Meidolai Kameya Edom. It's my, I signed the letter, I read, it's a 4-page letter, it's an unbelievable letter. He says, my signature testifies that do what you wish with it. But he did not tell me, and be sure to mention, I was once a member of the Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah. So you see, that was gone already. All right. Next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, we pick up exactly where we left off on Sunday, and very fascinating. The first item is about the Mashpia, Rabbi Moshe Weinberg, when he was a young kid, and the problem he raised, and it's the first time I think it was raised in black and white writing, and it's a problem that we all live with until today. From there, we sail into davening in English, and the Chatam Sofer, what stared at us when we were at that minyan in Washington Heights. It could very well be that the week after next, I'm declaring a special week called the Sharei Tefillah Week. The reason is that this past summer, I was supposed to speak in Shari Tefillah on Shabbos. You were there, and I had as much voice as a dead frog. So the Ribbono Shel Olam put me down. I had just arrived. The trip was too hard for me, whatever. And I owed them two lectures. I did speak Sunday morning, but I didn't speak on Shabbos. And I want to give those two lectures right here in class, record them, let them go all over the world. One lecture, this is what they requested, and I'm altering it a little bit, from Rabbi Rachman to Rabbi Avadji Yosef. I'm dealing with the real problem of Eben Ezra Halacha, what I wrote about my Rakafadan Chelek Gimel, what will be out in Rakafadan Chelek Dalet Be'ezrat Hashem. I want to put it all into context and have a lot to say. Just yesterday, a Rav from Manchester spoke with me after class, if you saw him here, and he raised this very issue with me, and I see I want to redo it and do it very clearly, black and white. The Monday, excuse me?
What is that issue? Is that
the Aguna issue? No. Yeah, the self-created Aguna, the man-made Aguna, not the classic Aguna. A mamzeret, etc. I want to show. I'm going to show something big. The lecture on Monday will be Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik in Berlin. The seven good years, as the Rav called it, and I want to analyze those 7 years and how it influenced the Rav or didn't influence him for the rest of his life. Okay, first of all, I gave out more yesterday. This is very, very fascinating. It's two parts to it. Rav Kook, when he writes about the difference between a slave and a free man, and Nathan Sharansky's speech to the judge right before they sentence him to a long jail sentence as being a traitor in Russia, his speech about the difference between a free man and a slave. It's unbelievable. Believe me, Rav Nathan Sharansky never knew of Rav Kook at that time, and they essentially say exactly the same. This is a sad article, SAR, Yeshiva in Riverdale, all about the administrator who molested 12 students.
Right.
And if you notice, involved here is the father of the young man, Lo Aleinu, who was killed, Ari Fuld. It's his father, who was then dean or assistant dean. It's an unbelievable article, and God have mercy. Architect Richard Mayer steps down. This is probably the most famous architect in the world today, and he too was accused of sexual misbehavior. It reaches a point where a man who's a decent, upright individual has to ask, what's wrong with me, you know? Everyone is in the headlines. It's beyond words, beyond words.
Because you haven't been caught yet.
No. Believe me, they're not going to catch me on that. Maybe they're going to catch me in being raised too right-wing. No. I understand, but it doesn't... Okay, the New York Times. This is an article by Tanya Selvatkanam, a Jewish girl, about the abuse by New York's Attorney General Eric Schneiderman. I mean, this reads like pornography, and she swears every word is true. Here's an article which I challenge you to tell me your emotions. If they're not mixed, you're in trouble. Germany, Berlin, ordains first Orthodox rabbis since the Holocaust. Okay, interesting article, mixed emotions. Here's a picture at my grandson's engagement up north. So there was a classmate of mine there, Morty Freiman. So this is a picture he took when his son graduated in the 70s. Do you recognize who's in this picture? Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld, Mori Rebbe the Rav, and Rabbi Zvulun Chalat. It's a picture that captures an era. There's the Rav, not the Rav we knew, full beard here. It's in a
vet.
77.
Where?
Oh, up on Amsterdam Avenue. It's after the graduation ceremony. Here's an interesting picture. That's my brother. And he was a counselor in Eagle Day Camp. And a kid kept the picture. and he sent it to a sub-student of mine to send down to me, to send to my brother. So I just want to mention, I would love to know if there's a picture like this of me. I was a counselor 2 years earlier in Eagle Day Camp. So if anyone has that picture, please send it on to me. But that's my brother. That is my brother, and those are the campers. Hard to believe. This is a poster someone put up, and someone wrote under it, Min Kenzich Alamol Falazin Af Chabad. You can always depend upon Chabad. Like, here's this girl, didn't have a lulav and etrog, but there she went to some Chabad sukkah, and look how happy she is with the lulav, and it's a nice lulav and etrog. But wait a minute, she's holding it in the wrong hand, the etrog? No, the right, the left, she's the right hand.
It could be sometimes they reverse the picture.
No, but it's right, it's right. Right? It's right. Okay. Here, what we uncovered yesterday in Shir, my sub-Talmud, Rav Lubavitz, Rav Moshe, who works for Chaf Kei, so he's putting out a book shortly, Teeth and Dentistry. So this is a book, if you're a dentist, and all, I've never yet met a nun from dentist in Israel, this book will be a great gift. Nida, how do you deal with a woman who's in Nida, okay? How do you deal with a woman who has a temporary filling? Brushing teeth on Shabbos, dental emergencies on Shabbos, kashrut of mouthwash, toothpaste, Listerine, pocket paps, and dental floss. Excellent, excellent. On the other side, for those of you who live in America, BJ's Wholesale Club, and Rabbi Leibowitz is in charge of the Heksha, evidently, a large variety of prepackaged kosher parva products are available in our bakery. Kosher prepackaged chickens, meat, cheese, and appetizers available in the Kosher Club. Look for over 100 kosher certified Wesley Farms items throughout the store. Kol HaKavod, we are a thorn in the throat of the New York Times. Take my word for it. This, by the way, is also Rabbi Leibowitz. Halakhically speaking, it's evidently the seventh volume he's putting out. So very interesting. This story is unbelievable, and I checked, it's true. Incredible story. Information from the Mossad led to the Rishon LeZion to releasing Anna Gunnar. Did you see the story? It's unbelievable. This Bukharin or Georgian was missing. And his wife heard rumors he was killed by the mafia in Russia. He was involved in the underworld. Well, how do you get evidence? How do you get proof? She's a young aguna, a young woman. So the chief rabbin has, I told you more than once, they have a division of gangsters, from gangsters, who go all over the world to track down recalcitrant husbands. I know one of the people who works with a Shvatami graduate. So the Taka heard these rumors that he was killed in Bukhara, I think it is. He gives all the details. The only one who can tell you this is the head of the mafia. So they go to Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef, and he contacts the Mossad. The head of the Mossad is my wife's first cousin. He's a yeshiva product, Cohn. And his parents came to the Merkaz Klita 50 years ago to see if my wife and I needed any help here in Jerusalem. That's the family. Tzaddikim, going back Dorei Doret. So he tells the head of the Mossad he wants to meet with the head of the Russian mafia. So the head of the Mossad says to the chief rabbi, if you go to meet with him, you won't come back alive. He says, let me look into it. And he, Taka, looks into it. And the head of the Russian mafia agrees to meet with the shliach of the chief rabbi. He sends a shliach, and he gives testimony where they killed him, how they killed him, where they got back to the got rid of the body, and they mata the isha to remarry. Here's an interesting story. Progressives can't ignore Jewish particularism. This article should be read by every Jew. It's by Emil Hirsch. Have you read Washington? Rakefet tells a story in Washington that on the boat coming in Aliyah, Yomo, sit down, the kosher section was fenced off in the dining room with a rope. And Friday night, my daughters, my wife, remember, were coming. What did my daughters ever see before? All right, they lived in Maplewood. They saw Goyim. They saw Jews who couldn't care about Yiddishkeit. But the only Rabbanim they saw were their father, Rabbi Teitz, etc., Rabbi Siegel, Chashiva Rabbanim, outside of myself. So Friday night, opposite us on the trade section, is a Reform rabbi making Kiddush over treif wine and treif meat. That was Rabbi Richard, it's his father. So this kid was raised formative years in Israel, and he's now a big Reform rabbi in New York, and this article is fabulous, that liberalism means you got to be part of the big world, you cannot be different, particularism. And this is why the kids today in America have nothing to do with Israel. Some of them hate Israel. We're an embarrassment to them. If anyone wants it, if not, we can make copies. He finally reaches the conclusion. He says, I see my own congregants. If you don't believe in particularism, ultimately you don't remain Jewish. It's a very interesting article. This article, believe it or not, has gone all over the world. It's been in the Jewish papers, all over the internet. My wife doesn't believe it. My grandson was thrilled to hear it. If you put on tefillin, it helps you against heart disease.
Oh, God.
And they did research. Yitzchak, they did research. Medical doctors in Cincinnati.
Magic amulet?
You better. No. It explains it medically, what the tefillin does for your arm. And helps you. One more second. This is unbelievable what Jews are capable of. When we were in New York, Pesach time, when YU needed me to talk about the Rav, and thank God, I hope I did justice to my Rebbe's memory as best the human can do. So one day, one of the famous Board of Trustees members took you to a very fancy restaurant. I don't know. I don't need fancy. I just need food. I know Klal Gadol Amru B'Torah, the fancier the restaurant, the less food you get. You understand? It's served beautifully. But Ribbono Shel Olam, you need a microscope to look at the plate. So we were opposite the UN, a very fancy, so fancy that you, no sign of kashrut, nothing whatsoever. There's a mezuzah up. But, you know, the people coming in there from the UN, the food, unbelievable, glatt kosher, unbelievable. So, there we are, and we got there early. So we took a walk, the UN, famous building, all right. When I was a kid, I would have been impressed. Today, all I can think of is Shem Shom Yerkov, but that's a different story. Outside the UN, there in a tour of Katanik's, demonstrating against the state of Israel. My wife was furious. She was fit. It ruined her trip to America to see these anti-Semitic, self-hating apikorsim. So here, they're meeting with the head of Iran and praising him to the sky as a lover of Jews. And that's when he said to them, we need more Jews like you in the world. My dear friends, my dear students, my colleagues, I thank you from the bottom of heart for honoring me with your presence. And we have to walk away with the feeling, unfortunately, it's a very pluralistic picture for Jews, but we know what's right and we know what has enabled us to reach this day. And Be'ezrat Hashem, it should only get better and better with Nachat, and more children, and more children. Kanayin Hara, my great-granddaughter, I got the name. I told her, I think I mentioned in class yesterday, when I heard the name, Yuval, Chaya, Yuval, isn't that a boy's name? Shpon Pashat Bereshit. But my brother told me, no, Bereshit already have Yuval, I believe.
Yeah,
right.
Yuval.
No, this is Yuval. And I have a Yuval, a nephew. But my brother told me it's unisex today, like Shacha. And then I opened up Yediot Erev Shabbos, or the paper, I forget which section, and they're selling furniture, and sitting on the furniture is a nice-looking woman, and it says Yuval says, her name is Yuval, and she says, this is good furniture. And boy, did I feel happy. Yuval is a girl's name. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das v'danya.
Yes, sir, I want to...